There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you? Welcome back to Max Mike Movies, the podcast with Max and Mike in it. The series we're working on is called Because I Wanna and You're Gonna Like It. The movies we're reviewing are only connected by the thinnest of threads. They're movies we want to talk about. Some we like, some we're not sure about, and some might have been made by Roger Corman, but not this week's film. The Andromeda Strain is a hard science fiction film from 1971 directed by Robert Wise, based on a novel by Michael Crichton. And this will hardly be the last film adapted from one of his books. Oh no, precious. But who's also adapted from a Michael Crichton book? Our host, Max 601 Levine. Say something scientific, Max.
Ah, science is evil and bad, and we don't like... Wait, change my mind. Science is good. We like science. Nope! Hate science! Sorry, I was channeling Michael Crichton.
I was going to say, thank you, Mr. Crichton. On this side of the couch, the soft, squishy side, is just little old me, Mike, squeeze loose. We got quite the movie to discuss, but before we do, we want to listen to you discuss our...
poll question.
As you may recall, last week, our question to you was, what's your favorite movie that was ignored at the box office but found new life somewhere else later on? Lots of good answers this week. Let's start off with Vince, that master of all things Herzog, tamer of the tiger tank, king of frozen food. Okay, huh? He's actually none of those things.
Didn't think so.
No, but he did answer, quote, for the poll question, I will let Mike say Rocky Horror, and instead we'll mention Murnau's Nosferatu. Not so ignored, but pulled from release with all copies ordered destroyed, but managed to be secreted away for decades in bits and pieces, and then restored even more recently to become one of the most lauded horror films in history. I'm guessing Blade Runner will be high on some lists, as it seems inconceivable. Inconceivable!
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
It seems inconceivable how bad it did when it opened compared to how popular and well-regarded, for good reason, it is now, end quote. He is indeed correct. See our episodes on the new Nosferatu and Blade Runner. Thanks, Vince. Chuck Mock was next. He started off posting a gif from Buckaroo Banzai, then continued with, quote, I probably like other failed at box office movies, but don't track that, so I wouldn't know. This one had an answer for you right in the middle of the movie. I didn't know it had been in the theater when I saw the video, end quote. Well, great choice, Chuck. Thank you. I mean, where else would it have come? Well, I guess they did do straight to video back
in the
day. Pooh, just gave me a shiver. Jen Ings, following Chuck's example, just posted a gif from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Thanks, Jen.
Oh, Rocket.
I think we can do better than that. Ian Coleman was next with, quote, John Carpenter's The Thing, end quote. See our entire episode. Well, you know this by now. Thanks, Ian. Kelly J. Cooper wrote, quote, this is not a topic I know much about, but after a little research, I'd say for me it's a tie between Shawshank Redemption and Tremors. Well, there's a double feature.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that Shawshank didn't do well at the theater.
No, not particularly. Or perhaps one answer is for a good movie and the other answer is for a beloved movie, end quote. Well, we haven't done the former, but check out our episode on Tremors. Thanks, Kelly. Yeah. I know. I thought we had too. I had to go look it up. Oh. So we have not done Shawshank. He warrants his own theme song, trust us on this. He said, quote, the Big Lebowski. Particularly, I like the bowling scene with Hotel California in Spanish. For Japan, My Neighbor Totoro, delightful animation.
That didn't do well.
That's
really?
What he says. I didn't.
Hey,
that
I
one I didn't
him.
Check on.
But I believe him. But wow. Okay.
Also, special mention for Japan: Ikebukuro Westgate Park on Netflix these days. It's kind of like Repo Man, but early 2000s Tokyo disaffected youth instead of 80s LA. All star cast. End quote. Have you heard of that show?
I think he's mentioned it, but that's it.
Okay, but I didn't realize Totoro did that badly either. But great answers as always. Thanks, Dave. Matt Reisman answered, quote, my first thought is anything by Terry Gilliam. The Adventures of Baron Munchausen or Brazil, for example. But I didn't realize Highlander was a box office bomb. I'm surprised it spawned such a sprawling franchise, end quote. Oh boy, Highlander, yeah, it was a big bomb.
That movie that told its great lie, there can be only one. Yeah, if only.
It didn't even make enough to cover its own budget. It's amazing it got a sequel. Then another, and a show.
And but, then another show.
Yeah, Gilliam.
And they're remaking it.
Yeah, please don't. But Gilliam, he never really gets his due. Thanks, Matt. Next up, Charles Forsyth with, quote, in September 2006, I saw a blog post about a great movie that was in theaters and that 20th Century Fox was dead set on making sure nobody actually saw. Thus, I find myself in a theater with my spouse and one other couple to see Idiocracy. I think we may have been the only four people to see it in the theater. Today, it's a cultural icon. This wasn't new for Judge, as Office Space was disappointing when it was in theaters, but also went on to be a cultural icon, end quote. See last week's poll question for lots of Idiocracy answers. Thanks, Charles.
Nice.
Did you see that in the theater?
I did not.
Oh, see,
I saw it on Comedy Central. They used to show it every other hour.
I say, you know, interspersed with Dogma. Nick Hoffman posted, quote, so many of these are all-time favorites of mine, I could have named any of them. Especially loved seeing someone pull Baron Munchausen, which I actually have to rewatch annually just cause. So, in order to contribute something new, I will suggest The 13th Warrior. It left theaters so fast, I didn't even know it had been released. I only saw it on cable later when looking for something interesting, and it blew me away. Casting was just stupendous, end quote. I also like The 13th Warrior. Thanks, Nick. Did you see it? You didn't see it in the theater, did you?
I did see it. I just have very little memory of it, except it's got Antonio Banderas.
And can't forget him.
Nope.
No.
The day's an XB.
You know, I feel a little stuffed up today. Or do I want Honey Nut Cheerios? I don't know. Regan McStravick said to us, quote, I know it's not him, but you know. Regan McStravick said us, quote, the most obvious ones for me are Blade Runner and, cheating a little because it was a series, not a film, Firefly. A big one for me, though, except I'm not sure it's totally qualifies because it's still one that not many people have seen, is Toys. Robin Williams, LL Cool J, Joan Cusack, Robin Wright, end quote. Toys. Never seen it, but you got me with Blade Runner. Thanks, Regan. Have you seen Toys?
I have seen it. It didn't really do... It was interesting for the cast, but it didn't really do much for me.
I mean, it's no Heartbeeps, but, you know.
Oh, God!
Which I've never actually seen, but there you go.
No one has.
Yeah. Noted author Tony L.P. Kellner responded, quote, Wizard of Oz didn't do that well initially. Toys is amazing, end quote. And you know, she's totally right. Oz wouldn't make its money back till it had been re-released a couple of times, been on TV, etc. Thanks, Tony.
Hard to believe.
It actually kind of is, but yeah. I think everyone spent all their money seeing Gone with the Wind that year, and that was the problem, so. In the mailbag, we have a letter from our old pal, Max.
Mike Movies?
Who writes this in the mailbag? Irish friend.
Oh, our poor long lost boy, Bill-o-lading, Bill-o-lading, Bill-o-lading.
Wow. Okay. Mine. Thanks. Thank you, Kristen, honey. We're still filming. He sends us, quote, do you know about Tyler Durden? Fight Club, 1999. The film did not live up to box office expectations when it was released in theaters. The studio wasn't sure how to market it, so the ads leaned on the dark humor and slick visuals without really explaining what the movie was about. Critics were split. It also came out about a month after the Columbine school shooting, so it was just a strange time for violence in cinema. Yeah. But the movie itself had a sharp point of view about consumer culture, male identity, and the sense of emptiness in modern culture that stuck with the men who did see it. It subsequently came to be a seminal influence on American masculinity, online culture, and our current body politic. Yes, you can draw a direct line from Fight Club to the Tea Party, Uncles, MAGA, etc. Uncles? I don't know that.
I don't know that one either.
It's no accident that Fight Club is one of the best-selling DVDs of all time, as opposed to the box office. I would argue there is not a college-age man in America from 1999 to present day who has not seen it, memorized a few of the catchphrases, and emulated, at least for a few seconds, Tyler Durden's ethos. I cannot say the film has been a force for good, but it's an enjoyable story that has undeniably earned its cult classic status. Pitt, Edwards, and Bonham Carter at the top of their games. It's worth a watch. End quote. I utterly forgot Helena Bonham Carter was in that movie.
Ah, yes.
It is a very interesting film, and that was came out one of those days where you went and saw the film, you liked it, and then 6 months later when the DVD came out, you bought it, even though you've never watched it since then.
Yeah, that's fair.
We have it, but thanks, Bill. Love those essays. Mm. Lastly, that blinking light does not mean we have an outer space biological breakout, just that our old pal and Max stalker, Doris Hempelmeyer, has left us another missive.
Wait, I gotta get more pomade in my hair.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes.
I thought it was Vaseline. KY?
It makes me shiny and manageable.
I'll go with shiny, but I don't know about manageable, but let's listen.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Dora Simplemeyer here to answer your poll question for the week, which just happens to be, what's your favorite movie that was ignored at the box office? Well, I think the classic answer would be Rocky Horror Picture Show because, you know, if you've ever been to one of those, and I know you two have, that really did become a cult thing. I think another one might be It's a Wonderful Life, because it was panned when it first came out. But then, you know, then we had the cable stations just kind of took it over and started playing it 24 hours a day. But the ones that I'm going to go with are a little more, not obscure, because one of them is actually very popular now, one is obscure. The one that's fairly popular is Princess Bride. It wasn't a big hit when it first came out, but then people started realizing how good it was and how many lines you can take from it, right? Am I right? And the other one I'm going to go with is a personal, close to my heart for a lot of reasons, and that's Labyrinth. I mean, now they have a whole ball that they did, and a masquerade ball, and I know because I'm part of it, but big, big cult following for Labyrinth. So I'm putting that out there. So I hope you two have a wonderful week, and I look forward to hearing next week's episode. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Oh, well, thanks, Doris. I'm amazed we only got one mention of Rocky Horror in there.
Seriously, so I thought that was going to be the front runner, but thank you for bringing
Princess
it in.
Princess Bride and Labyrinth, yeah. those are cool.
Yep.
So what about you, Max? What movie was always a bridesmaid but never a bride to you?
Honestly, and I know this may seem cheap because we just talked about it, but it was Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
I was guilty of not seeing it in the theaters, too, but on home video, I loved that movie.
And innocent, guilty.
Pretty much.
That's a deeper.
Yep.
Just that one.
Thank you, Harry. Well, no, obviously Rocky Horror.
Right.
Come on. And that one I saw in the theater many times.
Even more than I did, although you didn't always see the whole film.
No, I used to work in the theater where they showed it, and I would I would see the parts where I had to run in and make someone leave or go in and pick up something particularly heavy that had been thrown, like one of the other patrons.
That just made it more fun.
That one isn't on a different medium, really. That was just at a different showtime. But yeah, that and, of course, Rock and Roll High School.
Okay.
I like that movie.
Rock and Roll High School ever really so made fun. An impact? I'm not sure. That one's not even a cult.
Oh, it absolutely did. It was a midnight show for years and years at a bunch of different places, especially the Orson Welles.
I'd be interested to see if it actually made money over time, because I have a feeling it didn't.
Hey, it's Roger Corman adjacent.
Yes,
it is. His movies always never lost money. No, there was like one that lost money. But
He produced that one. But really, Rock and Roll High School. Okay,
because you know, high school, yeah.
To be fair, Rocky Horror doesn't count. We have to strike Rocky because it's still in the theaters.
Oh, that's true. It hasn't. That's true. It never disappeared, and it made its money back. I guess
many times. Yeah, I mean, it's been over 50 years, and in major cities all over the country, you can still find it playing. So technically, the box office isn't done yet.
Well, of course, now that raises a question. If we decided ever to discuss Rocky Horror, would we watch it at home or would we have to go to the theater?
Have you ever watched it just without any audience participation?
Yes.
It's boring.
It's very boring, except for the songs.
Yeah.
The songs are still fun, but everything else is really dull.
There are big, draggy parts in the middle of that film.
Yep,
so
the
problem is I don't know anywhere that still does it the way it should have been done. And that is at, like they did it apparently at the one downtown Boston. I can't remember
the
which.
Exeter. Theater.
Exeter Street. That's right.
That's the first place I saw it. Yep.
But the Harvard Square Theater, when they're actually letting people, I know this for a fact because I did it, in with 1 and 2 pound bags of rice, giant water soakers, big things of tissue paper, frozen bagels, and frozen various bagels. Other things. And where you were throwing things, and I went, it was,
I'm sure
I stayed
they don't
once.
Let you do that anymore.
No, I stayed once to see after the audience left when the lights actually came up and I could see the horrible, horrible mess
God.
That we left behind.
I saw
oh
that
my God.
Every weekend. Oh, thank God they had a special crew come in to clean for that.
But anyway, that's Rocky Horror. Yeah, I don't know if we'd ever do Rocky Horror. That'd be a tough one, but...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. What about me? What are my film choices
yes.
for... Yeah, I thought you were going to ask that, but... I mean, Blade Runner's right up there because it did really badly when it came out, and it has become a thing, and it's one of my absolute favorite films. But I got a surprise one for you. Mm-hmm. Birdemic.
Oh, come on.
I'm serious. It did very poorly if it ever went to the box office. But let's face it, Riff Trax made that thing an absolute delight.
That, well, all right, that is true. The Riff Trax version of it is brilliant. And I don't think it ever did make it in the theaters. I'm pretty sure that was made for the Sci-Fi Channel.
I'm not even sure it was made for that.
I think they found it on the side of the road and like, hey, let's play this. We got some dead air.
I think they found it on the bottom of someone's shoe. That's what I think. But also, one more, Forbidden Planet.
Didn't make money when it came out?
No, it was very expensive.
Wow.
I do not know how that film got made. It was very expensive. It was hard science fiction. It's really interesting, still holds up, and it is a favorite and an extremely influential film. Star Trek would not exist without Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah. But thanks tons for those swell answers.
That was
we
very cool.
love them, just like Levi snaps.
So much.
So how about taking a crack at this one, folks? What is the most accurate feeling science fiction movie you've ever seen? Mm-hmm. And the first one that answers Moonfall gets an entire truckload of
Moonfall!
Bumpy Buck cereal dropped on their doorstep. So
it's got to be Moonfall.
The moon will help us. So let us know. We'll remind you how to tell us at the end of the show. But next up,
the facts.
We're talking about Andromeda Strain. Budget, $6.5 million, which for 1971 was not chicken feed.
No.
Take, $12.3 million, which for the times wasn't
bad.
More like pony feed. Apparently it was the 16th most profitable film of the 1971 season.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, 16th. Right. There you go.
16th.
Speaking of budget, where did it all go? Well, that set for the Wildfire Lab cost $300,000 on its own. That being said, there was still some economy going on. There weren't 5 full levels of the lab made. They just repainted the parts needed to represent the scientists working their way down.
What?
I know, right?
Oh, man, the magic has been ruined.
Author Michael Crichton was offered an invitation to come look around Universal Studios while this movie was being made. And who got to show him around? Some upstart director named Steven Spielberg, who would later adapt another Crichton novel, Jurassic Park.
That kid never went anywhere.
Nah, good thing he's still doing tours.
He's stuck in accounting.
I think he played one of the Cylons once. There you go. What the heck is Squeeze? In the movie, they just toss off the idea that it's Sterno. Well, Sterno is poisonous. So what you do is you take Sterno, which is a gelled mix of ethanol and methanol, and you stick it in a sock, and you squeeze all the liquid alcohol out, add some nice fruit juice, and there you go. Please don't do this. It's likely really bad for you.
No, don't try this at home, although I'm sure it's delicious.
Do not taunt Happy Fun Ball. When you pay that much for special effects, like the mutation of the Andromeda cell, you don't just use it once and toss it away. You bring it back for shows like The $6 Million Man, The Bionic Woman, Knight Rider, and Airwolf.
Oh, Airwolf? Wow!
Catch it! Okay. There weren't any women scientists in the original screenplay. Screenwriter Nelson Gidding suggested that one of the characters be cast as a woman, but director Robert Wise said no, thinking that what Gidding meant was someone like Raquel Welch in Fantastic Voyage. When it was made clear what he really wanted, Wise was all for it. Of all the movies made from Michael Crichton novels, this is the only one which actually has a cameo by the author in it. He plays Bearded Doctor.
Bearded Doctor. Man, that guy walked away with the movie.
Made the film. Re-released in 1972, this movie was part of a double feature. And what was its partner?
Attack of the Puppet People?
Nope. 1970s oh. Airport. How did they sell this?
Wow.
With the tagline, "Together on one great family program." Bring the kids.
Oh, jeez.
It's actually a piece I left out of trivia. The airplane set for when Dr. Stone is being flown off to Wildfire is the same airplane set from Airplane.
Or Airport, I should say. Of course it is. Oh, jeez.
Somehow, this movie originally received a G rating, although there is a few seconds long shot of breasts.
Also, yes, we do see a few shots of male buttocks.
Yes, there are some buttocks. So, Wildfire is supposed to be located in a remote part of Nevada, over 100 miles from any inhabited area. Except, according to those map coordinates, Wildfire is only 27 miles north of Las Vegas. Eh, no loss.
That's not inhabited.
Nah. Since nearly everything in this cinema can be traced back either to Robot Monster or Columbo, sure enough, lab doors and clocks from this movie made their way into an episode of Columbo.
Of course.
And star James Olsen appeared on Columbo. And so did Kate Reed. Coincidence?
I don't think so.
Well, yeah, speaking of TV detectives, both David Wayne, who plays Dr. Charles Dutton, and Ken Swofford, who plays Toby, will reunite in the 70s TV series Ellery Queen. Remake? Apparently, this movie was remade into a miniseries overseen by Ridley and Tony Scott in 2008. And it had Viola Davis in it.
What?
Yeah.
I have no memory of this at all.
No, there's a reason for that. Go watch the preview and you'll see why.
Okay.
Yikes. Okay. Lastly, the Infectious Disease Society of America praised this movie, calling it the, quote, most significant, scientifically accurate, and prototypic of all films in the killer virus genre, end quote.
Wait a second. Is this an organization dedicated to the promotion of infectious diseases?
No.
Oh, good.
They just oversee them. But their little quote there, doesn't that make you feel all warm and cozy inside?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So, anything you want to add to Trivia Max? Anything you knew?
Bah.
I'm going to take that as a no.
Bah.
Yeah. Go, three bags full. Off you go. Okay.
Bah.
So let's get to the plot. It's 1971, and a satellite has fallen back to Earth and landed in the tiny town of Piedmont, New Mexico. There's only one problem. It seems to have brought something back from outer space that's killed everyone there. The military tries to go in and retrieve the satellite, but the team attempting this dies too. So the government sends out for the Wildfire Team, a group of young, superpowered men and women who fight... Oh, no, wait, they're actually a group of elite scientists trained to deal with biological threats. Right. Yeah, okay. All four are gathered, two heading directly to the super-secret base buried deep underground. The other two go off in very special suits to retrieve that satellite and bring it to Wildfire Base. As they wander through town, they can't help but notice that whatever this thing is, it killed almost instantly, as people have fallen while in the middle of daily tasks. As they prepare to leave, they hear a baby crying, and then an old man comes out of nowhere accusing them of killing everyone in town! The two survivors are gathered and they, along with the satellite, are taken back to Wildfire. There, the scientists painstakingly examine all the evidence so that they can piece together what they're facing as well as how to deal with it. Seems the satellite was designed to do exactly what it did. Find an organism that can exist in the vacuum of space, then bring it back down to the surface for a peaceful purposes, just like a death ray.
Farming.
The clock is ticking. Could this new life form already be turning into a super colony in the nutrient-rich environment it's been dropped into? Do the scientists have time to deal with this thing, or are their own clocks already ticking faster than the ones outside? It's Michael Crichton at his most Crichtonist.
The film.
So, Max, did you see this when it came out? You might have been taken to that nice family double feature with Airport.
No. I did not. I didn't see this until like videotape in the, God, I don't know, 80s and 90s.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Because I didn't see it when it came out, obviously. I think at 71, I would have been six. Mm-hmm. I did see it fairly young in the 70s, though. It used to show up in Channel 56 all the time. And I used to watch it whenever it would come on. So, which is an odd film for a kid, but I don't
know. Yeah, it is. Whatever. I realized there was one piece of trivia that I noticed. It's a very small thing.
That's okay.
When they're working with the robo arms.
Right, the Waldos. But
there is a voice. There's like, it's the computer voice. And I was sitting there going, that voice is really familiar. And it's the only scene, but it was, I looked it up. It was voiced by a guy named Walter Edmiston.
Ah.
He is a very prolific, but very background voice actor. But he has one credit that we know. He was the voice of Enoch from Land of the Lost.
Oh, God.
Yep. Yep.
The now we have to connect Land of the Lost to Robot Monster, so.
I'm afraid so, yes.
Eunuch, save us. Okay. Well, what else can save us is the cast. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, this is a very, how to put this, TV movie kind of cast.
Oh, yeah. These guys are... When you look at them, almost every one of them is, you find yourself going, oh, it's that guy from...
From Columbo.
From Columbo, or that guy from that show.
Yeah.
I think the only one I could think of from a movie was Kate Reid, who plays Dr. Levitt, in that she was the bitchy old woman in Atlantic City, the one who keeps insulting Burt Lancaster.
Oh, good for her. She, as I said, also shows up in an episode of Columbo. But what we'll stop and start at the top with James Olsen as Dr. Mark Hall.
Mm.
Let's face it. He's our surrogate. He is there to ask questions about how come this works? What does this mean? He, in some cases, he's kind of dumb for a doctor, but we need him because this is a heavy science film.
Yeah.
And
they don't dumb it down, which is actually kind of impressive.
No, they don't. Yeah. They also don't. There's only one point where there's kind of science magic, and we'll get back to that. But it's otherwise, one of the things that I do like about the film is that it's pretty procedural. It's like, no, we need to do this in a certain way, or we could miss something, which is very important. So I think he works very well. I only know him again from an episode of Columbo, but I think he works very well.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Hill as Dr. Jeremy Stone. I think he does great.
Yeah, he's very good as the pure science guy who may or may not be hiding something.
I mean, that's up for debate, right? Because at one point, Dr. Dutton accuses him of knowing all about the germ warfare stuff. And he's like, I heard about Scoop when you did. But he doesn't deny knowing about the germ warfare parts of wildfires.
Yeah.
So
he's not very convincing at a couple of points. Yeah.
No.
So you have to wonder how complicit he was.
But I think actually...
he's very good. And he's believable as just... a sort of Reed Richards, I know science and nothing else kind of guy.
Well, I want to come back to the main four scientist parts, but I also want to say, I think he's a very realistic portrayal of a scientist that's gotten at least his foot in the door for politics, right? Because there's stuff where it's like, we have to do this way, but I may or may not have also talked about germ warfare because, well, gee, that's kind of interesting and I want to learn more about it and have some money.
Yeah.
So, because of all four of them, he's the one who obviously has money.
Yeah.
David Wayne, he is one of my favorite character actors. He's been so in everything. I love him from Ellery Queen.
He's just like everybody's dad. He's the guy you kind of want to be your dad.
Yeah. And he's often cranky. He's somewhat cranky in this. Not always.
Sure.
But he's got that really nice balance of cranky and wise, which I think works very well. And he's been in, I mean, if there were TV shows in the 60s and 70s, he was in them at some point somehow.
He was everywhere.
Kate Reid, who for some reason her picture on IMDb shows her in a nun's habit. I don't know why.
Not sure what movie that's from.
I think she's awesome.
She is so good in this. I mean, she's enough of a wise ass that you believe it. And obviously this is a woman who has had a lot of trouble in a very male profession.
Yeah.
But she's still incredibly competent.
Yeah.
And, you know, she does have her secret, the fact that she's epileptic.
Right.
And as they point out in just like one line, it's like, why didn't she tell anyone? The prejudice, the difficulties, no one would hire her.
Yeah.
People are stupid about it. It's like, well, that's practically medieval.
But
it's like, yes, but she's right.
Yeah. I really liked her in this. She's also from an episode of Columbo, and I liked her in that, too. She kind of had, I don't know how much range she has, but that's okay. Yeah. I want to mention Paula Kelly, if for no other reason, that she is the
she's the
one
black
person of color in the entire
film.
She's
the black person. That's it.
She doesn't have a big part, but I do appreciate the fact that her character stands up to Dr. Hall a couple of times. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have George Mitchell as Jackson, the squeeze drinker, who's
Expecting him to demand to be made a sergeant and have them charge the booze.
Different character actor, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the only other person I want to mention, and honestly, it's partially because he's also in everything, but also he has a cool name, is Kermit Murdoch as Dr. Robinson or Robbie Robertson.
Kermit, yeah. Yay!
Yeah, he's been in an episode of Mary Tyler Moore and everything. He's been in everything. And a lot of the other character actors in this film have been in everything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But that's pretty much the major cast.
Yeah.
I did want to bring up the director, Robert Wise, because he's a director.
Yes, this is a very different movie for him.
Yeah, well, he's done a few heavy hitters, like... And I didn't.
The Sound
I forgot
of Music.
This. Well, The Day the Earth Stood Still is his.
Oh yeah,
which I'd That's forgotten. Right. Which is one of the top science fiction films of the 1950s.
Yep.
Run Silent, Run Deep, which I did not know was him.
Oh God, the submarine war movie.
Yeah, which is considered one of the, if not the best submarine World War II films ever. West Side Story,
yeah,
which is one of the biggest, most highly thought of Hollywood musicals in history, next to his other Hollywood musical, The Sound of Music.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, Star Trek the Motion Picture, which I actually enjoyed. They still could cut out about 10 minutes of V'ger, but otherwise I still like that movie. But lots of other films too. So we have kind of some Hollywood royalty here. The thing is that does it pay off? Because... it's a very hard science fiction story, and we'll talk about that later. We start off the film with some text thanking various agencies in the government for helping them depict the truth. Well, there's some science magic, because I don't believe a word of that. Though the government helped us tell you what happened.
Yeah, this is a little bit too much like this. It's based only on the secret testimony. I kept expecting Criswell to show up. Like, no, this is not based on a true story. It is based on the theory is very believable. Absolutely.
Well, here's my point. Do I think this could have happened? Yes. Do I think we would know about it even now? No. Like, if they had found some sort of space germ and it almost got out in the 70s, I think that's still secret. Not telling. Mm-mm. Meanwhile, on Oak Island. Anyway, that's deeper. So yeah, that was, I thought it was interesting though, because it sets the tone. They really are trying to say, we're doing this as realistically as possible. At least that's what I got from it. What did you get from it?
No, I definitely got that they were really trying to make it believable, especially things like, even things like the decontamination protocols.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are all real.
Yeah.
Everything. Of course, I do like when they give them each these little
capsules.
Tubes.
It's
and all I could think was, insert? Insert? Yeah, because we can't, they can't block the, they can't sanitize the GI tract, so.
Well, you die.
Butt plugs for everyone.
I think it's a suppository. I don't think it's a plug.
It's a butt plug.
You can't poop for the next week. Okay. Just hold it in. It's science.
You just explode when you're 50. Yep.
Some of them are already past that point, so we're in trouble. Yeah. But we start off the film, too, watching these two, I hate to say this, these two Gomers get into a van and go in, we'll go pick up the nice satellite. What could go wrong? And they drive into town, and it's like,
everybody seems
to be dead. And the guy back at the base goes, your orders are... proceed and get the satellite. And the two Gomers are like, okay.
Great.
And then we just hear them.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that was really effective, where we're with the guys back at the base listening to the audio of these guys with their radio going, of them driving through and how they're reacting to what they're seeing. We don't see it. Did you feel that was effective, or did you feel cheated at that point?
Oh, I thought that was very effective, because at this point, you don't know what's happening. You know people are dead, but you don't know if it's a monster or a biological or chemical. You have no idea, and that just heightens the tension.
Yeah, I
thought
so,
too. That's something this movie does a great deal. It's very tense, which is remarkable given how little actually happens in it.
That's the problem with it, and I think a reason that it might not work out when we get to the end is that, let's see, how much action is in this film? That's right, none.
Oh, no, there's some very tense ladder climbing.
That's as close to action as we get.
Which we do, because, at one point, he's attacked by a device called a laser.
Oh, Max, could you tell us, what is a laser?
Oh, it would take a scientist to explain.
I know it's light amplified, blah, 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 blah.
Light amplified by simulated emission of radiation.
No, that's not it. I think it's...
yes, it is.
Yeah, so yeah. We start off kind of with exactly what the scientists and other people are getting. It's like, we don't know.
We have no idea what's going on. We don't know how bad this is, how good this is.
Yeah. And then our two Gomers die. We hear them die. And so what happens is this guy sits down to this machine, which will make no sense to modern audiences. Yeah. He sits down to a teletype, which is literally a typewriter that itself can codify what's being typed into it into electronic impulses, send it over a wire, and have it print out on a typewriter somewhere else. So They're typing off to some agency, which we don't even see. All we get is this impersonal message back on the teletype, which again could either be considered cheap because we're not seeing who the government agency is, or could add to the tension. And I'm going to ask the same question. Did you think that added to the tension, or do you think it was cheap?
I like the idea of the faceless government organization being behind it. Because, if it turned out it was, I don't know, the FDA or Fish and Wildlife, that would have taken away something from it.
All the FDA does is approve marshmallows. I mean, that's not... Everyone knows that. I'm just kidding, Byron. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
A friend of mine works for the FDA.
We're joking, FDA. Please don't stop inspecting things.
Yeah. I did have a question. Mm. And then I looked up the answer because I was wondering. So when the wildfire team... when the wild alert goes up into the sky in the shape of the fire, and everyone's called, two of the scientists, Dr. Hall and Dr. Stone, are sent off to, thankfully, suited up, are sent off to go get the satellite back. But when they get there, there's some wildlife hanging about. Did that bother you?
Oh, the buzzards?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily, because there are diseases that won't jump from human to avian and vice versa.
Well, later on, this is, it's a over 50-year-old movie, spoiler. Mm. Blood chemistry turns out to be a major factor in this film.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I wonder if avian blood is more acidic or more alkaline than humans. And it turns out it is. So there's actually, although they never talk about it, there's actually a built-in reason for why the vultures are still alive and why they have to kill them. So
I think that the ones that they did kill with the poison gas were turkey vultures.
You just don't like turkeys.
No one likes turkeys. No one of any sense likes turkeys.
I like them for Thanksgiving.
That was delicious. The other thing. But don't worry, this gas will only kill the birds. What?
Oh, come
on. Honestly, that was my only no way moment.
There is plenty of stuff that will affect us and not animals and vice versa. That's not a big deal. Onions is a big one. Don't give onions to your dog. They can be deadly. I had no problem with. They probably just dropped onion gas. So, or, collected farts after having French onion soup. Don't know.
Sure.
Speaking of animals, though, the film does start off with a very necessary, nice, big credit that says, all the animal filming was done in the presence of the nice animal people. No animals were hurt. Everything's fine. Situation normal. Which was true. Because, spoiler, if you haven't seen this film and you are at all sensitive about seeing animals depicted as dying or anything, there's a good chunk of it. And quite honestly, it's really effective.
It is. It's disturbing as they just expose various lab animals to the virus. Although at one point he says, okay, why don't you use a buffalo? I'm like, that is the smallest buffalo I've ever even imagined. Apparently it's a type of rat.
It's the tiny albino buffalo. Yes, it's the urban...
That used to roam the plains of this country in great herds.
Urban albino buffalo, it's true. The long-tailed urban albino.
6 inches long, yes.
No, but... And they don't shy away from it. Like, they literally go, okay, here's a rat, and now we're going to expose it to Andromeda, and... Wow, that was quick. But you
okay, let's try another one. Now let's use a primate. Like, die.
And let's face it, when it gets to the monkey, that's the most uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's the,
And I very carefully checked on this, and it's like, no, nothing was hurt. Everything was fine. And the ethical animal people were there. And I forget what they actually used to put them. They just put them to sleep, but they were fine. And they do it 3 or 4 times. It is a very shocking set of scenes, mostly because the scientists are like, okay, let's expose the rat. Wow, that was fast. So let's get another one. Huh, let's get a monkey. Wow. Yeah, man, that's tough.
Yeah, like, it's Which is absolutely believable. They are. Yeah. They have to desensitize themselves. They have to separate. It's like when Dr. Hall, who is, again, as you said, our surrogate,
mm-hmm.
and he's also the one with the most empathy. He's worried about his patients. He's like, no, don't feed the baby. Yes, I know it's screaming, but we need its blood to get more acidic.
And that was one of my earliest notes here is, hate the screaming baby, hate. Because it comes back.
I felt really bad for Jackson because he's stuck right next to it.
Well, and they also have the baby wrapped up so it can't move its arms, and I'm sure that's part of the reasons, or maybe the reason it's crying, besides that it's supposed to be hungry. But yeah, I he has to find out, and he is trying to save them, but yeah. The four main the four main scientists, I thought each kind of approached or represented a different emotional state, which I thought was really interesting. So Stone, he's the logical one. He is the procedural guy. He is the follow the steps. We're only here to find out what this is, how it works, and how to stop it. Nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. Hutton is sort of more the fatherly wisdom type. He's looking at the repercussions of science, like not the coulda, but the shoulda. Right?
Yeah.
Then we have Levitt, who's the skeptical crank, who's like, yeah, you say this. No, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
Yeah. She's also supposed to be kind of the more radical, I think.
Right. And then we have Dr. Hall, and he's the emotional one. He's the liberal heart in this. He's the one who cares about people. They're not subjects to him. In fact, they make a correction. They say, he says, patients. He's like, no, the team has two subjects. And he's like, what? He can't deal with that. I think of the four, that Hall is meant to be the one closest to the audiences.
Yeah, he's the one who's supposed to be, at least, he's the one who's supposed to be most understandable to us. And he's the one who's sort of the least scientific, which really betrays kind of Michael Crichton's distaste for science, shall we say.
I don't know what you mean, Max. Now, could you expound on that, his distaste for science?
Yes, well, life finds a way. You have no understanding, you have no humility.
Max, are you trying to say...
This is how Rumblefly eats.
Are you trying to say... He didn't write that.
I know.
Are you trying to say that every one of Michael Crichton's books has to deal with, I don't know, some sort of scientific exploration and how man screws it up? You know, that's not true.
You know, I never thought about it until you articulated it that way. But, you know, this is Crichton's legendary for being kind of an anti-science science fiction writer.
Yeah.
Science is usually the bad guy in these in all of his stuff. He goes back and forth sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Later on the Jurassic series, he's like, no, maybe science isn't so bad. Yes, science is bad.
Well, I think also one of the problems with Michael Crichton's books is he actually gives scientists some pretty interesting ideas. Oh, DNA in a mosquito and amber. Oh, we hadn't thought of that. That could be interesting. That's the problem with science fiction, is often it comes up with these really cool things and never thinks you realize somebody's going to do this, right? Star Trek, I mean, that's like the major example. It's like communicators. You know, if we had little phones we could just wander around with and talk to any people whenever we wanted, that could be cool. But they're going to... The one that they haven't done yet, and thankfully they haven't figured it out, although I know they're trying, is the transporter. Because as we all know, the transporter is murder.
Yeah, kills you and creates a new clone of you somewhere else.
Yeah, there's all sorts of ethical issues with that, but So Michael Crichton, so to be fair, I haven't read his books, but I know what they're all about. The next film of his that would come from one of his books, I believe, is Westworld, which is all about, hey, what if we came up with AI and we let it loose and, it could be bad. Oh, maybe we shouldn't do that.
Well, either that or theme parks are evil. I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Larry Niven jumped on that bandwagon with Dream Park, which kind of did the same
evil
thing.
That was, again, the people were the problem.
Well, and supposedly, not Future World, that's the second one, it's Westworld. The problem was that they had the AI creating itself, which...
No, I'm talking about Dream Park. Dream Park didn't make it evil.
But it was the same idea.
Yeah.
So... We have a number of science-y things going on here, and one of the big problems is that a lot of times they're very unsettling. Those environmental suits, I thought, the two doctors wandering around Piedmont in those sort of space suits, itself was just kind of unsettling. Did you think?
Because they're very clearly made to resemble spacesuits for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel like, wow, this is, you know, Earth, but they're treating it like it's a hostile alien environment.
Which it now is.
That whole town, the fact that so many of the corpses have their eyes open.
Yeah.
That's unsettling. I like the juxtaposition. There's a shot where they find a naked hippie woman,
mm-hmm.
and she's wearing a peace sign medallion, and immediately they cut to an older woman with a crucifix on.
Yeah. But that young woman, we saw her boobs.
Yep. I also did kind of like when they find this old woman who has clearly hanged herself in her house
right.
and left a note, have mercy on my soul and to hell with all the others.
I bet she was everyone's favorite neighbor.
That was the thing. Instantly, you know exactly what kind of a person she was.
I actually, there's that whole section where the two doctors are wandering through town. Robert Wise does this sort of split screen thing where we see the screen splits up into squares where we get, okay, here's a square of Dr. Hall walking through town. And now here's a square of what he sees. I really liked that because it allowed us to go through their experience fairly quickly and stay focused on the important parts. What did you think about that?
I found it jarring. I don't like it. It reminded me a little too much of Ang Lee's version of the Hulk, where he was trying to simulate comic book panels.
Oh.
And he would do multiple shots on screen at the same time. I find it splits focus. I don't really like that.
I liked it for another reason, and that's what allows them to use still frames for the dead bodies, which is a lot more realistic looking than when we can tell somebody's trying not to blink. Yeah. So, although I think
I get why I did it, but I didn't like it.
I really liked it. I really did.
Just a taste thing.
It was also a very 70s thing. This would actually show up in TV a lot, like on Columbo. But everything shows up in Columbo. I also like the fact that we're not only handed this, what is it? But then suddenly this baby and this old man come out and we're like the scientists trying to figure out what do these two have in common that would keep them alive. So I thought that was a really nice little juxtaposition, like the beginning of life and end of life. Why are these two people of everybody? But then, to be fair, we have to be sort of shown and led through everything because most of this stuff is beyond our understanding.
Oh, yeah. This is a lot of this is supposed to be very high-level science. I when they're in the facility, when they're in Wildfire, you're always hearing these announcements coming over, none of which make any sense, and they don't bother explaining any of them.
The red zone is for loading and unloading.
I wish it was that clear. It's like the EL4 has been reassigned to EL9.
Apparently, there was something in trivia I didn't put in that those were actually based on actual scientific something.
I have no trouble believing that, but I have no idea what they meant. And I like that. It's like, okay, yes, you're emphasizing the fact that the audience doesn't really understand what's going on here.
Yeah.
This is beyond us.
It also puts up a really interesting barrier between the average citizen and what the government may or may not be doing. Because the stuff that we don't know they're doing is a lot of times stuff we can't even begin to understand. And they've already got people working on this, whatever this thing is. And that, I think, is part of where the tension comes in. Knowing that this could really be going on right now.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine what it even is. So one of the things that I thought added to the nuance was the fake computer graphics. Because they actually, for the most part, are fake. Most of them are fake. But I bought it.
Yeah. It was believable. I do have to say some of the stuff they had the computers do still ranked as magic, especially for 1971.
Yeah.
It was too much like, well, now we will have the computer analyze it. What in the hell does that mean? It's just going to run all the data together. It's actually going to extrapolate. It's having a computer analyze something is meaningless. That's just semantic null.
Do you mean the end where they're showing its growth potential and we get the 601?
I mean every time they said, let's see what the computer says. It's like,
Most of the time it was just giving readouts based on things like blood tests. So it's like, oh, what was the pH? What was the concentration of oxygen? What was the blah, 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 blah.
Or the zero growth and such. But
growth, I did have a problem with that. My thought was because I checked, there's like 530 little mm-hmm. petri dishes full of stuff, and number 499 was the one that had no growth. Wouldn't the computer have known, because it's flashing red, that, hey, kick this one out?
And wouldn't they have published a summary at the end?
Yeah.
And paper? They don't. They just say, this is the last one.
Yeah.
Like, they don't, wait a minute. You didn't flag the one that actually set off the alert?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a plot point we see at the beginning. Dr. Leavitt has epilepsy, and right. it is, what is it called, photonically triggered, or...
I don't know.
It's light-triggered epilepsy, which is when if you see certain colors, often red, flashing at a certain frequency, that you will have a seizure.
Which is why we have Pokemon moments.
Yeah.
Look it up, kids. It's really weird. Or what's disturbing. Your name's voice from Entertainment Tonight?
Mary Hart, yes. Yeah, yeah.
I will have to say that I thought all of the procedures that we see them go through felt utterly believable.
Oh, yeah. I wonder about the xenon gas thing.
It's a xenon lamp that burned off the skin. Yeah.
And they have to put on that big diamond-encrusted Doctor Who helmet. That's what I thought when they're putting it on. It's like, oh, no, they've turned into Doctor Who aliens.
Oh, it's a Cyberman.
Yeah. And then they get Zorch. It's supposed to burn off the exterior, like the first few layers of skin. My first thought was, does it get rid of all your body hair, too?
Well, yeah, because they show Dr. Hall ahead of time has got a big chest rub.
Oh, okay.
And then afterwards, he doesn't. Of course, we don't talk about the little Dr. Hall, because now it's probably...
Yeah. They've all got themselves Brazilianed now.
Well, I think it's fair to say that if they were really being procedural on that, all of the doctors would have been bald. They would have cut off all their hair.
Yeah,
but I don't...
Shaved their heads.
That's fine. They went through enough. It's okay. Because we actually get to see Arthur Hill and David Wayne nude from behind.
Yes, but from the back.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, we do not see little Wayne or little Arthur.
Which is fine. I don't need to see this.
Yeah.
I will say that, as I said, I want to come back to this. There's a little bit of kind of science magic in here. Mm-hmm. And that is, at some point late in the film, suddenly Andromeda transforms, mutates into a non-infectious form. Well, that's handy, isn't it?
It can happen. That happens with some viruses. It's just, this thing is designed to survive.
Well, designed is an unfair word. We don't know anything about design, but it is.
It exists.
It is proven that it survives.
Yeah. I mean, again, this kind of speaks against the idea. They're sort of wondering if it was an attack, if this was like an extraterrestrial sort of invasion or
whatever. They don't ever bring that up. They knew they went out and found it. Scoop was out there to just go, could literally scoop something up, which is what it did. Mm. The fun part is when it's like, we didn't tell Dr. Stone about the scoop part. It's like, was that a good idea? Oh, we've had problem with scientists before, which actually refers to Albert Einstein, but that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was a little the president doesn't like scientists. I'm thinking, oh, God.
Yeah, I know, but that's
Deja vu.
The thing I found interesting, they don't really talk about this, is that they call it the rock. It's not, it's like a grain of sand. It's tiny, tiny, tiny. They say that grain of sand is something that's not mineral. It's more akin to a plastic. Mm. So my wonder was, where did that come from? What did Andromeda originally stick onto that got spewed out into space?
But of course, possible that plastic is long carbon chains. They could have formed. It is possible it could form naturally out in space somewhere.
But you could then say, well, what if it's like the bucket seat of some sort of space pickup truck? You know, who knows? Maybe it's truck nuts from outer space.
God dang it, Lem, and drop something over on that around Earth a ways. Oh, hell, nobody goes there. No one will notice there, Bubba John Blorp.
I think there actually is a movie called Space Truckers, but there you go.
There is. I'm almost certain of it.
And then we get to the very, very end, and there's this thing where we're watching Andromeda replicate itself or divide and conquer or whatever, and finally our own screen just goes to 601, which is the number that means overload, too much data, blah, 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 blah. And we just sort of sit there for a few seconds, and it's like, oh, good credits. Phew, thank you. Something normal.
Yeah. I wasn't sure what to take away from that. Does it mean, it's not done mutating? It could turn into something else? Or is this a you're next? next, you're next kind of thing, where we should keep watching the skies.
It's I understand it's properly pronounced sheeing.
Yeah, well, I think you're full of skit.
I my feeling, it was very much an underline to science. You got to keep, that's bad science.
We're all about coulda, not shoulda.
Yeah. One last thing before I think we get to the end, my last note is, what did you think of the soundtrack?
A little heavy-handed, but you kind of needed it because so little is actually happening visually.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it kept the tension going. What about you?
I love the soundtrack. I have it on vinyl. I think it's really interesting. It's one of those rare occasions where you've got an electronic soundtrack. It's not traditional instruments per se, and it's not melodies and harmonies. It's, what they originally called it in Forbidden Planet was electronic tonalities, and it's kind of that. I found it really added to things. It added to the tension. It added to the weirdness. And I thought it was really neat. I've always liked that soundtrack, which is why I got it on vinyl. But,
Cool.
But you know what else is cool? We get to the end of the show and we decide, lots of science, no action. And this was an older, over 50-year-old movie. Does it hold up?
The finish.
So, Max.
Huh? What?
Does it hold up?
That's a rather personal question.
The movie.
Oh, the movie. The cereal.
Max doesn't hold up, that's for sure.
I think it definitely does. It's still tense. It's still believable. I mean, nowadays, of course, the computer stuff I have some trouble with, but whatever. It's 1971 where computers still filled entire rooms.
It passes the Levine test. Nobody ever once says, I'm in.
Nope, no one ever says, I'm in. So I can't object to that. I think the performances are really adequate. I mean, I'm sorry, none of these guys are superb actors. These are all TV actors, and it shows.
But I think that works.
It works because this is supposed to be very downplayed. They're supposed to be scientists. They're supposed to be, you know, low emotion, a lot of objectivity. I even like the bit where he's... You know, where Mark Hall is climbing the ladder and being shot by lasers.
Mm.
Because quite honestly, it makes sense. The lasers are there to shoot small animals that might get in. So they're not that powerful because they couldn't be unless they're hooked up to like a reactor. So they hurt. But it's like Stone says, unless they hit your spinal column, you'll be fine.
Yeah, except when he gets hit in the face and it's like, Dorothy.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If he gets hit in the eye.
Poppies.
That's right. Oh, no, I've been hit by the LSD ray.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was going into shock. And again, they do a weird way of depicting shock, but that is also believable. Everything in this, pretty much, is believable and disturbing. Because I have no trouble thinking that the American Southwest is dotted with little places like this working on terrifying things.
Yeah.
That if they got out, we'd never know because we'd all be dead.
Probably.
What about you? How did this hold up for you? I mean, I know you've loved this thing for a long time, but now that you're so much older than, you're younger than that now, how is it?
I love this film, and I don't know why. It is slow. I would say for today's audiences, I don't know if they would sit through it. Because nothing happens. And they start off showing us times at the bottom of the film, day one, day two. And then once we get to like day three, they start telling you the time of that day. So things slow down as we go through the film. But I think it also shows the necessary steps and the speed that's needed to get through this thing to try and contain it. And now that we've made this horrible, horrible mistake... I don't know why I like this film so much, but I really like this film, and I probably watch it at least once a year. It is, but it's not. There's no gadgets in it. There's no, there's no fight scenes.
It's all the situation.
Yeah, but I guess I think it's got a really good examination of its subject. Mm-hmm. And before Michael Crichton goes a little off the rails, I think it's a fair question to ask. Excuse me. Yeah. Should we be doing this?
Yeah. Is this a good idea to grab random organisms we are pretty sure are dangerous and bring them down to turn them into bioweapons?
Oh, we don't even know they're dangerous. We just want to see what's out there still living in a vacuum and bring it down here. What could go wrong?
It's the most dangerous snake on Earth. I'm going to poke it with a stick.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And it never gets preachy. It shows both sides of the story. We get Hall on one side who's just like, people hurting, why are you doing this? And on the other hand, we get Dr. Stone that's like, this is the most interesting, fascinating thing I've ever seen. And it's going to take all of our combined knowledge just to figure out how it lives. So I really like this film. You know, it might surprise me if you put it in a theater today, because people might still find it interesting.
I think they might.
In some ways, the technology isn't that out of date. Yes, of course, the computers are much smaller. The graphics are much bigger. I watched the preview for the 2008 version, and let's see how to put this. I didn't watch the show. The word ruined came to mind.
Okay.
Apparently that there's wormholes now and
what?
Black ops and all this other. Yeah,
oh, dear.
I had to make it exciting, I guess, but whatever. But as far as hard science fiction films go, I don't know that there's any that I could say is a better example of hard science fiction than this.
I think this would make a great double feature with Colossus, the Forbin Project.
I think you'd need to take something before you went in. Something that made you really happy.
Yeah, otherwise you just walk out going, well, I'm going to lie down in traffic now.
Yeah, otherwise bring the whole family, because that's what they said. And you know what else you should bring the whole family to? Our poll question.
Sure.
Yeah, so, yeah, speaking of science, what we would like to know next week is, what is the most accurate feeling science fiction movie you've ever seen? No Moonfall, no Geostorm, nothing that we used in our, whatever that was the name of that series, our
disaster porn.
None of those. But what we would like is answers that you can give us on Facebook or Blueski or Mastodon, which nobody's found yet. Well, you can find us there as Max Mike Movies. You can find us on our website, which is, of course, MaxMikeMovies.com. All our films are there. Remember, there is a search function, very handy if you want to see if we've covered a movie at some point. Very handy for us to see if we've already covered a movie and forgot.
Yes.
Because that does happen. But we have lots of different series.
You are correct, sir.
You can also just email us directly at us@maxmikemovies.com. We always like getting your missives, especially from Bill O'Lading, our favorite Irish pal.
And your voicemails.
And your voicemails, which you can give us through our amazing hotline, which is 617-398-7266. That number one more time, 617-398-7266. Oh, and every podcast ever. Yeah. I would also like to point out that we love hearing feedback. Did you like the episode? Do you agree, disagree with us? Do you have ideas for shows or ideas for movies that should be included in series? Did you not like stuff? Just send us something. We'd love to have it. We'd also like to have the answer to this burning, itching, flaking question, Max. What film is next up on Because I Wanna and You're Gonna Like It?
Well, as we've been watching a movie about health issues, and I myself came down with a bit of the Andromeda strain once or twice, if you know what I'm saying.
Did you get out of the bathroom?
There's another strange condition I think we should discuss, and that would be, what do you do if you have a scarlet pimpernel? There are certain skin treatments that you can use to get rid of it.
What?
Yes, we are going from the far future of 1971, the distant past of the French Revolution. And we are going to hunt him here, hunt him there. Those Frenchies hunt him everywhere. We are going to watch the original Leslie Howard Scarlet Pimpernel.
There's actually a movie of that?
Yes, absolutely there is.
I thought it was just mentioned in a Daffy Duck cartoon.
Scarlet Pumpernickel. No, the Scarlet Pimpernel, a swashbuckling, rip-roaring, rib-tickling, spleen... fondling.
Sure.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's a movie. We're going to watch it and we're going to talk about it.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.